Moses. Last we saw him, he was being taken into the Pharaoh's house to be raised in a privileged atmosphere far away from the slavery of the Hebrew people, of which he was one. And now all of a sudden we find him taking care of sheep. What in the world happened? It was years before I realized the full story of Moses. Everybody loves the story of the baby in the basket, called the Ark, as Kathy told us last week. It's a great story. And we love this story of the burning bush. It's glorious. But how in the world did Moses end up on a mountainside with sheep looking at a burning bush? Well, back there in Egypt, he was out taking a nice stroll one day, and he saw one of the Egyptians beating one of the Hebrew slaves. Indignant and angry that this was happening to one of these Hebrew slaves, Moses killed him. The Pharaoh, in turn, wanted to kill Moses. And so Moses, being a wise person, ran away. And he was fortunate enough to come upon this country of Midian, found a wife, and ended up shepherding the sheep of his father-in-law, Jethro. So he's out here on this mountainside. He had taken his sheep out a little farther than usual, and he's on the mountain of God, Mount Horeb. And he catches sight of a bush burning. But what makes Moses different than most people is he bothered to take the time to go look at it. There have to have been other people around. But Moses took the time to go look at it, and he suddenly realized, hey, it wasn't turning to ash. It just kept burning. And out of the bush comes the voice, Moses! Moses! This was no chance occurrence. This man is being called by name. You can't exactly ignore a voice that's calling you by name, even if it is out of a burning bush. And so Moses pays attention. And when God sees that Moses is paying attention, God says, "Remove your sandals. You are standing on holy ground." Moses is somewhat frightened because if you look at the face of God, you will die. So he turns aside, but God has words for him. I want you to go take your people, the Hebrews, out of the oppression of Egypt. And Moses says, "Who am I that I should do this? Who am I?" Well, Moses knows himself pretty well, and he knows he's not the best person in the world. After all, he did kill someone. But God doesn't let him go with that. Who am I? Moses says, "Well, I don't know who you are. Who shall I say sent me? I can't just go up there and say, hey, I'm supposed to lead you out of Egypt. They're going to know who I am and why I'm there." Well, tell them the God of your ancestors sent you. "Well, what's your name?" "I am who I am." Moses was raised in an Egyptian household. He may not know this God of Israel all that well. But "I am who I am. I will be who I will be." This is a God so vast that this God cannot be contained in a single name. This is a God who is I am. There's a shiftiness there that you can't get to pin down. And so Moses is supposed to go off at the word of the great I am and lead the people to this land of milk and honey. But as I told the children, he was not readily persuaded. God said, I'll be with you. But Moses had his excuses. I'm not strong enough. Well, God chose him. He has God with him. So he'll be strong enough. Well, I can't talk. Well, for Pete's sake, take Aaron and let him talk. Get out of here. And so we have Moses reluctantly answering the call of God to do something that seems way too big and too frightening to Moses for him to do it. Isn't that the way? Or is it? Do we still find holy ground? Or are we so busy with our lives that we can't take the time to recognize a burning bush when we see one? It's kind of like when you're on vacation. You have your itinerary. We're going to stay here tonight, and then we're going to get up at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, and then we're going to go to this place. And tomorrow night we're going to be in Timbuktu, and we'll stay there, and then the next day we'll get on the, you know. We have our agenda. We have our plan. But somewhere along the road, you see this sign, and it says, such and such a cave. And there's something that pulls at you, and you say, I've never been in a cave. I wonder what that's like. And so you follow that tug, even though it's awful hard for you to give up on your agenda. You follow that tug, and you go down that road, and you go into that cave. And as you stand there, and you look at the stalactites and the stalagmites, and you see this glory, you think, oh, I could have missed this. But that tug brought you there, and you at that moment are on holy ground. We have the opportunity, but we are so busy in our lives. We have radios blaring, music blaring, TVs on. How can we possibly experience God's voice in our lives because we're never quiet enough to hear God? But God is there. We just have to be aware that God does break in these little moments when we least expect it. We are on holy ground. You're standing looking at the waves crashing on the shore. And you've been feeling desperate and alone. And all of a sudden, on the tips of a wave, you see a rainbow. And it's as if God just said, it's okay. It's okay. I'm here. Or you look at a plant you've had on your windowsill for months. It looks dead. And all of a sudden you come down one morning and there's a blossom on this plant you thought was dead. And God is breaking in and saying, new life is always possible. Don't give up. I am here. I am with you. You stand on a mountaintop. And you look out over the vastness of creation, mountain range behind mountain range behind mountain range, and you know in that moment the vastness of God, the Creator who made all of these mountain ranges, one behind the other. You're looking at a craggy, rocky mountain cliff, and you see one little lone pine tree clinging to the edge of the stone for life. And there it is. It bears a solitary testimony to the possibility of life even in the midst of desolation. Sacred ground. We come to the table to share communion. And if we open our hearts and our minds to the possibility, God breaks in and Christ is powerful. palpably there with us in the breaking of the bread. And we can feel the communion of saints surrounding us as we take that bread and that cup. All of those near and far, those gone beyond our reach, are there. Sacred ground. And in those moments, God reaches out and touches us and says, I need you. I want you. I have something very special for you to do. And we can be like Moses and say, well, who am I that I should do that? I don't have those skills, or I'm not a very good person. Believe me, I've been there. When God said, I want you to be a minister, I said, oh, who am I? No. I'm just a sinful, horrible person. Why would you want me? And God said, that's why. That's why. Because you know what it's like to be sinful. And so God calls people like Moses, people like Jacob, the trickster. You, me, God calls each of us to a very special thing. And we're not called to be ministers, all of us. Aren't you glad? I would have been real glad if I hadn't been. Because it was the last thing I wanted to do. I was chair of personnel at a church. And the church was being sued by one employee. Another one clocked in and disappeared for the day. Another one apparently was stealing money out of the locked cabinets. And God wanted me to be a minister? Good grief. I had more sense than to do that. So God reaches into our ordinary lives and sets aside a moment and calls us. And calls us to be fantastic teachers or plumbers. Thank goodness for plumbers. Refrigerator repair people. Thank goodness for those people. And the ones who install air conditioning. Oh, I thank them. We all have wonderful special talents. And if we are doing something somewhere that just feels so right to us to be doing that, then God has called us to do that very thing. God has a need for us to do that thing right there, right then. And so we do that thing which is our bliss, as one writer put it. And that is a blessing to everybody else to whom it is not a bliss to do those things. The PNC has been laboring long and hard to find the pastor who is called to come to this church. They've talked a lot about what it means to be called, I'm sure. Thing is, it's not just pastors who are called. All the people in the pews are called as well to contribute to the life of the church right here in this place at this time. The church is not about ministers doing all the work of God. It is about the people of God being called to do the work of God in a particular place, in a particular time, in a particular way. And it takes everybody listening for God to figure out what this congregation is supposed to do, and we don't wait for a minister to be the idea person. So as this congregation calls a new co-pastor, you will have a whole new life. You're going to have a different relationship between those co-pastors than what you've ever had before. This church can no longer be what it was for any of the previous pastors. Even though Pastor Chris is still here, it is a new configuration that God is calling you to be. And you must labor together to Be open to those holy moments when God breaks in. It's the most exciting thing in the world to be in the middle of a committee meeting. Yeah, committee meetings, I know we're famous for them. But it's the most exciting thing in the world to be in the middle of a committee meeting, a deacon's session, whatever it is, and to suddenly feel the ideas just popping out. Do you think that's us? That's God breaking in and saying, pop, 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 here are the ideas. And you have a group of people, all 10 of them in the meeting are in different places and believe different things, and suddenly, somehow, everybody comes to a unanimous understanding and agreement about something. Is that something we did? No. It's God working among us. And God calling each person in that committee meeting or each person in the congregation to be open to God's presence and saying, this is what I want Providence Presbyterian Church to be and do. Because this is my work in this place, and you're the best ones who can do it. And when the congregation takes ownership of a project, it doesn't matter if the minister is still there or not. Those things continue to be a part of the mission of that congregation. The congregation I served 10 years ago still has a mission project that started when I was there, but not because I said, this is what I want you to do. It's because it was driven by God. And they're still doing, and it raised $20,000 this year. And it's a congregation of 80 members. That's because it is driven by God. And these people know they are about God's work. So when God calls you, the people of Providence Presbyterian Church, to do something you've never done before, or you don't think you have the resources for, you have to remember God told Moses, I will go with you. So as you break new land, as you break into doing things in new ways and new things, and it looks really scary because you might have to risk, or it's different than anything you've ever done before, oh no. You have to remember, God calls us, and then God gives us the ability to do the things God calls us to do. And so you will be able to do whatever God calls you. The resources will be there. The talent will be there. And you, working together, people of God, like you've never been before. Because God goes with you. I am empowering you, enabling you to be the people I am has called you to be. God will go with you.